Screen up here. Like I said, good afternoon, everybody. I appreciate being here. Ryan Persoon, I'm a District 13 Park Supervisor up here on Middle and Upper Lake Oahe. Talking to you a little bit about what we do for park habitat management here in some of my areas. First of all, kind of habitat and food plots in our parks. I kind of want to briefly go through the why and how and the what and when and the where's. I'm going to breeze through some of these details kind of quick. This presentation was kind of put together as an instructional video really for my district on kind of the direction we wanted to go. But the why, obviously we want to provide outdoor opportunities. We're not just in the camping business, but we're also, you know, inclusive in all recreational opportunities, whether it's hiking, bird watching, hunting, obviously fishing and things like that. And we want our parks to be all encompassing of those activities. In doing so, we want to influence our animal behavior. We want our campgrounds to have wildlife near them for people to view. By doing that, we'll also bridge nutritional gaps and keeping wildlife in our parks, where typically they would be out in agricultural fields and things like that. We want the food sources to be in our parks, which keeps them here. Obviously, our plots and habitat attracts insects, pollinator plots, flowering plants, things like that, which bring the birds and other wildlife. Forage seeds for bird and provides cover. Some of the things that a lot of people don't really consider is controlling the unwanted. It's kind of how it evolved in some of my areas is we had large patches of Canada thistle or just any types of weeds that we didn't really want. We wanted to control it. So we planted pollinator plots, food plots, things like that. It prepares the soil foundation for whatever we want to establish in the future to meet our goals. It adds the aesthetics to the park, it beautifies it. A lot of our park lands are very diverse, but primarily have cool season brome grasses. And we want to try to bring in some warmer season grasses and flowering plants. So we have to have a better soil foundation. The biodiversity is important when we want to try to establish that with foundations, but soil health and atmospheric health is also something that we really highly consider. We try to keep our soil organic carbon stocks in the ground, keep the anaerobic decomposition, the bicarbonate production, nitrification and denitrification in the soils. And we'll talk a little bit more about that, about, you know, how we plant as well. So healthy soil is the cornerstone of life. The benefits to water is water storage and filtration, carbon storage I just mentioned, the biological diversity and function, and productive capacity for food. In this case, mainly for our wildlife. We want to enhance what we have. Like I said, we have a lot of brome grass, cool season grasses, and kind of the precursor to establishing a better habitat or grass planting or food plot or anything is done in one of two ways. Prescribed burns is probably what we prefer to do. It prevents the brush and trees from growing. It eliminates vegetation buildup, increases diversity, discourages weeds, recycles nutrients, and reduces unwanted insects. And one of the biggest things that we hear from recreationalists, especially in summertime, is the amount of wood ticks that we have. And fire does help suppress those numbers. But we can accomplish a lot of these things with intensive grazing, which I prefer to go to because prescribed burns are very Mother Nature dependent, staffing dependent. It's hard to have prescribed burns in our campgrounds that often have a lot of woodlands and close to camp spots. So we have introduced for the past several years, I think about 5 years now, an intensive grazing where we bring in approximately 150 head of cattle and 85 acres for 2 to 3 weeks before Memorial Day. And we utilize them to remove those cool season grasses, break down the soil crust. So hopefully some of our native grasses can break through and grow. It lays down the old plant material, prevents erosion, plants seeds deeper, provides nutrients. A lot of benefits that we like to use for grazing. And the lower right-hand picture is some of those cattle right behind a camp spot in the campground. And in all the years we've been having cattle, we've only had a couple of complaints, pretty minor. One lady was afraid that the cattle were going to attack her because they were staring at her, but really there's no negative impact. In fact, I think it's a positive for our campers. A lot of them come to see the cattle and they enjoy watching them around their camp spots. Just a couple other pictures. One of the main questions is, does the cattle displace the wildlife? In this picture, you can see a fawn on the edge of the pasture. And we just contain the cattle with a simple single electrified fence. But no, it doesn't. We do have an abundance of wildlife in our areas that are grazed and does not displace them. The other pictures are just kind of a before and after. A brome grass area before grazing and after, which is what we're trying to knock down all that fuel, potential fire hazards, as well as promote those warm season grasses from growing. The hows, there's a lot of different ways of doing it. How we do it in my areas is we start in late summer for the next spring. Typically, we'll either mow it, hay it, or graze the property. This can be done in the spring and sprayed prior to planting, but we prefer to do it. You get a better control if you're spraying in the fall and in the early spring. We'll respray no later than June 15th and plant shortly after. Actually, we'll spray before that and plant no later than June 15th. A lot of times it's closer to July 1st, depending upon when we can get equipment and weather and things of that nature. We plant by whatever means necessary, in-house equipment. Some parks have some small equipment. We really do rely closely on using our Department of Wildlife and some of their equipment and their help. They're very busy, so sometimes it can be a struggle. We do look towards our Natural Resource Conservation Services and Pheasants Forever to help us with equipment. But I often use local producer partnerships, and that's worked out really well for me, and I'll discuss that a little bit down the line. The hows, we do prefer the no-till drill method. We like to keep the carbon captures in the ground. We like the less impact on the soil. And in our case, with cultural significance, a lot of times we don't want to dig up that soil surface. And no-till drilling allows us to do that. Be creative. Sometimes we have to disc it and broadcast seeds. Other times we'll broadcast seeds and let the cattle stomp again. All of ways which work for us. We don't want to plant food plots too thick. We always go by chart recommendations. Oftentimes we get that off the bag of seed, or NRCS gives very good instructions on what to plant and how to plant. Typically, we like variety. We like a lot of different seeds in one planting for diversity. We plant everything an inch deep, big seeds, small seeds. The big seeds will pave the way for the small seeds, and that's all worked out really well for us. We plant in small batches because a lot of times your drill will vibrate and all your small seeds will settle to the bottom. So we're refilling often even stopping and mixing that seed up to get a better diverse planting. Options are endless for what you should plant, depending upon what your goals are. For years 1 through 4, typically we're planting an annual. We're coming back and really trying to focus on creating that soil profile and soil base and the nutrients and converting those micro and macro organisms for a good foundation for a future perennial crop. Oftentimes it's pollinator plots or native grasses in this case. Again, I talked about how we use natural resource conservation standard cover crop requirements. If we take a soil sample and realize we're deficient in certain nutrients, the NRCS will tell us what cover crops to plant to bring that soil profile back to the standard we're looking for. Utilizing local seed sale sources, local elevators. A lot of times, if they have a broken bag of millet or something like that, they'll put it in a pail and they'll call me up and give me some free seed, which I appreciate. You can contact specialized seed companies. Milborn Seeds in Brookings and I think out in the hills as well is a great place for us to go. They really help tailor the seed mix that we're looking for. And we also consult with our precision ag producers. A lot of times they have large acres of something that they plant, and they might have some leftover seed for 5 acres and don't want to store it. And a lot of times they'll help us out with seed that way. Speaking of our ag producer partnerships, we enter in agreements with a local or neighbor. Actually, in this case, Whitlock, it's Cronin Farms. It's mutually beneficial for both the park and the producer. It's no cost to the state. The producer gets paid for helping us by the commodity harvested. In the picture below, you can see them in the springtime mowing off about 8 acres that we seeded into a cover crop this summer. They're able to